Welcome back into NFL Live Kansas City here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Josh Abrisco, and Miller Lite is our sponsor here on NFL Live Kansas City. Miller Lite is the original light beer brewed with great taste and only 96 calories. Crack open a Miller Lite and enjoy your Friday headed into your weekend here. As we're talking about the NFL getting a deal done, the NFL and the NFLPA have come to an agreement. It's kind of adjusting the CBA. It's putting some things into place for what happens if the season gets started and then stops. What happens if it never gets started? What is training camp going to look like? All these things that took a very, very, very long time for Major League Baseball to get figured out, the NFL has gotten in a bit less time than that. We'll use Ian Rappaport of NFL Network here as our sounder for the day. Here's what he had to say about the agreement between the NFL and the NFLPA.
Yeah, there was not a lot of good that was going to come from this agreement, mainly because both sides lose when there is a revenue shortfall, considering that they end up splitting the pot. So what the NFL and the NFLPA did, rather than take the entire hit this year, rather than spread it out over the course of the entire CBA, which is what the union wanted, they basically reached a compromise. The 2021 cap is going to be a minimum of $175 million. So basically $25 million less than the cap is this year. Not great, but probably not as bad as it could have been. Then they're going to spread out the revenue shortfall between 2021 and 2024. If they get more revenue than they're expecting, the cap goes up a little bit, but they're going to deal with it in a short term, but not necessarily the length of the CBA like some thought. The guaranteed money, how to deal with that, that was an issue as well. If you're a player who has fully guaranteed base salaries for this year and the season somehow stops in the middle because of the coronavirus pandemic, you are going to get your money. It just won't be this year. Guaranteed money will come in the form of next year, or if you're a free agent, as soon as you are fully out of contract. And then finally, there is an opt-out. It is two tiers. You're a high-risk individual, and it is not safe for you to play. You get a $350,000 salary this year for not playing. If you voluntarily opt out, you get a $150,000 salary. Both sides compromise, reach this agreement after several weeks of negotiations. And yes, we can turn our attention to football.
A really good breakdown there from Ian Rappaport of NFL Network. Again, so you get the salary cap smoothing over the course of a few years there, 21 through 24, but not over the life of the entire CBA. I don't want to honk my own horn, but I think that I said sometime earlier this week that was my expectation, is that it would not be all a 2021 hit. That would have been ridiculous. That could have been, it would have been incredibly detrimental to everyone. Owners saying they wanted to take it all at once, I think is silly. But beyond that, you know, trying to stretch that over a decade, also, you know, very, 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 very long form there. Having a slightly handicapped cap from the 21 through 24 seasons, that'll be just fine. Patrick Mahomes will have a big cap hit in 23 and 24. The Chiefs are going to have to work around that, but everyone's going to have to work around it in some form or another. And look, man, I mean, Getting guaranteed money figured out, getting big contracts figured out, that's on everyone's table. And yes, the Chiefs have a lot of money locked up in those two things, but value is already a value, to be terribly reductive. Getting guys at good prices is always a goal for any NFL team building exercise. So it's not like just now value got even more valuable. This is already going to benefit the same teams that would have previously benefited and hurt the same teams it was going to previously hurt. It might be a little more detrimental to the Chiefs because they do have a lot of money locked in here, but it's on excellent players, and that seems like a perfectly okay place to be. Rudy, I don't know how you're feeling about going to a break, but I would like to take one if I get a thumbs up, and I have. I am Josh Abrisco here on NFL Live Kansas City. We will take a break. Whenever we come back, we will break down a number of other things around the NFL and around Kansas City. Seth Kaiser, our guest next segment here on NFL Live KC. Welcome back into NFL Live Kansas City here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Josh Abrisco with you here until 8, and then with you actually until 11, because Almost Entirely Sports kicks off as soon as this wraps up today. We'll keep talking about a lot of football things for the next several hours. But right now, we're going to hop back to a conversation had a little bit earlier this week with our friend Seth Kaiser, both of The Athletic and the new Chief in the North newsletter. We've talked to him about a bunch of things, obviously. We talk to him every week. And we talked to him previously the day the Chiefs had signed Chris Jones. And so in addition to talking about a new project he put together that I think you will very much enjoy if you're a Chiefs fan, kind of hopping back to some earlier moments from the careers of a couple of guys that, again, I think you're going to enjoy hearing about very, very much. But in addition, talking about that with Seth this week, we also talked about what he thought as the Chris Jones deal. We got the details from that. We got a little bit more information about the structure there, and I asked Seth if that structure and if any of those numbers move the needle at all for him in his feelings and his very positive feelings about the Chiefs getting a long-term deal done with Chris Jones.
It wasn't anything that's too different. I have been impressed with people's ability in my mentions to use that deal as a way to show two totally different points. I've had people tell me that proves that Chris was asking for way too much money and he must have come way down. And I've had people tell me that it also proves that the Chiefs value him like way more than everyone thought. And I'm like, both of those things probably aren't true.
I don't even think I understand the logic of either of those. And I might not need to.
I think we want to confirm our priors. That's fine.
Yeah.
And I think it was a well done enough contract that no matter what your priors are, it allows you to confirm them in some way, shape, or form. The Frank Clark deal, you know, you and I talked about this last week. Our colleague Nate Taylor at The Athletic has been talking about the Frank Clark contract for like 8 months,
yeah,
saying this is roughly what he's looking for in terms of dollars per year. And, you know, he didn't get it, like the exact Frank Clark deal, but he got around that 20 mil per,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And that's what he was looking for. Was he looking for the exact same deal? No, probably not, because if you look at the deal Myles Garrett just signed, the deals that defensive tackles get and the deals that edge rushers get are different.
Yep.
Unless you're Aaron Donald. And no one's arguing that Chris is Aaron Donald.
Yep.
Although I think he's just as good a pass rusher, but that's neither here nor there.
Whoa! Do you really?
I do. Well, it just depends on what you want. Like, if you look at it on a per-snap basis, he's just as productive. I've never charted Aaron Donald's win-loss percentage, mm-hmm. but I do know that he's right up there in terms of win percentage, at least what Chris is near there with Donald in terms of what other people have charted. I don't think he's quite there. I know PFF has Jones graded higher as a pass rusher over the last year, maybe the last few years. So, I mean,
that sounds like an article for mnchiefsfan.substack.com or bit.ly/SethHatesMoney.
I do like that. bit.ly/SethHatesMoney. I dig that. I like that a lot.
You're welcome.
It's something that I might think about here a little bit. I just think at this point, if there's anyone arguing that Chris Jones isn't one of the best five pass rushers in the NFL, I don't know what will convince them.
That's fair.
At this point.
I don't think I heard you do the Aaron Donald pass equal as a pass rusher thing. I think that specifically might be new, but yeah, I mean, you're also right that Chris Jones is good, might not be worth your effort at this point.
Right. I feel like I'm already accused of being his cheerleader, which I'm perfectly comfortable cheering for and pushing for great players personally. And that might just be a weird thing I do.
Go ahead.
No, you pointed this out to me before we recorded Times Ours. And also, anyone who listened to this last week's Times Ours, man, I was obnoxious about this whole thing.
It's really good. But go listen to it. Wherever you get your podcast.
This is the one issue that I get a little fired up about, even more so than a lot of other players, because it's very few times that I've seen people try so hard to discount a great player.
Yeah.
And that's been frustrating. I mean, maybe Eric Berry for a couple years when people were still like, oh, he's terrible in coverage zone. It's like, by what metric?
Right.
Like, what are you talking about? And so it's a frustrating thing. So it's one that still gets me to be more snarky than I should be.
I think it gets you to be the exact level of snarky that you should be. And I legit think that last week's Times Ours
wherever you get your podcast, just Times Ours, just you can search for it or get it, of course, through The Athletic. I think it was one of the best episodes we've done. We had a big news thing. We had a lot to say. I thought it was excellent. So people should go check that out as well. There are just a handful of things I want to kind of trot through because you also mentioned Frank Clark, obviously, and his contract. And I also don't think it should be hard to admit that his season last year did not start out, you know, with that version of the contract in terms of money, earning that price tag. We also found out that he, like, couldn't feel his fingertips and then later had some sort of internal organ disease. So he had some stuff going on. And you took a look on Friday for your Freak Play Friday series at his dip and rip move. And it's a great breakdown. Again, some of the stuff you need to look at it because there are clips in the email. But how do you think we are largely evaluating or misevaluating Frank Clark at this point?
You know, with Frank Clark, there is there's a lot of opinions about Frank Clark, and part of it does go around the fact that, like you said, he had a lot going on in terms of injury. Mm-hmm. He was also in a new system, and so the biggest thing that I try to push with regards to Frank Clark, and actually the article that you're referencing here is free for everyone to look at, by the way.
Excellent.
So if you go to the bit.ly/SethHatesMoney,
that's right,
and you say you want to look at the site first before subscribing, this Freak Play Friday you can look at. So here's the big thing, and I talk about this early in the article. In 2019, in Frank Clark's first six games, and we know after the first six games he was still hurting.
Mm-hmm.
We know he was still hurting and he got sick because he did take a few games off, and this was after the first six games. But you can see there's kind of this clear delineation. His first six games, he had one sack and three hits. Now, I could walk people through the film and show that he really did contribute in a big way in a few games there anyway, even while he was at like 50%, like against the Ravens especially. But that's neither here nor there. So he had 0.67 sacks/hits per game. Okay, 0.67. That is not good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
In the final 11 games, he had 12 sacks, and this includes obviously the playoff run, right?
Mm-hmm.
12 sacks and 18 hits on the quarterback. That's 2.73 per game. That's a really good number. That's like when you're talking to guys who led the league last year, that's roughly the number you're looking at, anywhere between, you know, 2.5 and 3.1, give or take. And so we've seen him over an extended period of time have very elite production, but he's not thought of as elite, and in part, I think it's because the way he started off last year. I think something that gets misunderstood with Clark is because he's really good at everything, people tend to view him almost as a jack-of-all-trades, master of none.
Yeah.
And that's just not accurate. He's excellent at everything. His pass rushing, once he got healthy, you could see it. He can win every which way. And that's part of why I did an emphasis on the dip and rip move here, to demonstrate he adapted to physical limitations to try to become more of a finesse rusher. And once he got healthy, and then there was a threat of his power rush moves, like his bull rush or long arm, he kept those finesse moves and utilized them in conjunction with his more of his power moves and became just a brutally efficient pass rusher. He's also a beast against the run. And so I think there's a little bit of a misconception in terms of how good he is. One way that I know that is when last week you and I were talking about a legitimate argument can be made the Chiefs have elite players in seven spots.
Yeah.
The only one that I got pushback on is Frank Clark.
Yeah.
And maybe because a lot of people were saying, well, no, Khalil Mack is elite. I would say Khalil Mack is in a plane by himself,
mm-hmm,
for an edge guy. That's my opinion personally. I didn't look at a lot of his film last year, but in previous years, I thought he was in an area all by himself.
Yeah.
Kind of like almost like an Aaron Donald level, not quite.
Right.
And then you can still be elite without being in that stratosphere. And I think Clark is absolutely up there in terms of overall talent at defensive end. I think he's a top five guy. So I think he'll have a chance to show that. He certainly was down the stretch last year, and it'll just depend on his health.
This is something then that combines the two that I saw earlier today. Pro Football Focus did a ranking of NFL defensive lines. And, you know, they've got their grades. And then some of it, I think, is also subjective. I don't think there's a clear math to it all. But I clicked it kind of thinking, like, I bet the Chiefs are looking top 10 here, at least. because they have Chris Jones, who's excellent, and who, like you mentioned earlier, grades out well with PFF, and Frank Clark, who, while he had injuries in the first half of the year, everyone knows Frank Clark is very, very good. And they came in at 15 on the PFF list. I thought that was interesting. They were also behind some really great groups and also some not-so-great groups with really great top-end talent. Like, they're right behind the Browns, which obviously Myles Garrett. Like, I was surprised by that, but I don't know that it's wrong after giving it some more thought, because we do know that, you know, there's Chris Jones and there is Frank Clark, and then there is nothing but question marks, or the things that aren't question marks are not positives necessarily either. Like, we either don't know and hope it goes well, or we think we might know about, like, you know, Breland Speaks, or at least the ceiling of a guy like Taco Charlton, right? So, I don't know, does 15 surprise you at all?
It does to an extent when you have headliners like Jones and Clark. But, for me, it would just all depend on what their methodology is.
Yeah.
Because, so it depends on their opinion of Alex Okafor, who right. I think is a solid player but not a great one. Mm-hmm. I think he's a starter on a lot of teams, though. And that's important in that you don't have, you know, these two stars and then a bunch of just garbage players.
Right.
I think he's a solid player. I think Derek Nnadi's a solid player. I think Mike Pinnell's a solid player. It just depends on what they're really looking for, honestly. Yeah. I am surprised a little bit by that. I think it's tough to find a lot of duos in the NFL that are better than Jones and Clark when it comes to getting after the passer.
Yeah. I agree.
That might not be the only thing they're looking at.
No, I mean, they acknowledge in the story that, like, their concern is with the depth and that Clark and Jones are great, but that it does get really thin after that. I'm just sort of curious if that surprised you also. Because, yeah, I think I would have expected 8, 9, 10, maybe. But I think off the top of my head, I think the Rams were at 8, which is a defensive line with the best defensive linemen in the sport, and then also some dudes. Like, so, you know, I'm not 100% sure as to, again, the overall math of it, but I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too. I do think that I'm guessing they utilized their grading system to create it. And I know Clark didn't grade out great last year overall.
Not. That's true. Yes, and that's referenced in there as well. So maybe they end up higher next year. But, I just thought it was interesting. I'd throw it at you. Something that came out today in the Chief of the North newsletter was what you mentioned earlier, that you kind of had this idea of, you know, whenever this thing happened, I knew that this player was going to be special. And you went through a moment for that, for Tyreek Hill, for Travis Kelce, for Chris Jones, and for Justin Houston. I want you to talk about anyone except for Justin Houston, because I want to come back to him.
So, I mean, the most fun one to me to talk about is Tyreek Hill. And that's in part because there's been a lot of publicity for him over the last week or two, mm-hmm. where national people are starting to sit up and take notice and say he's one of the best receivers in the NFL, maybe the best. Now, if only someone had written about that a month ago in detail at the Chief in the North newsletter. Anyway, I like looking at his the most because there was two separate moments for me. The first being when I realized that he wasn't just another Dexter McCluster or even DeAnthony Thomas, both of whom were useful players.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't quite live up to the training camp hype. You know, I mean, those guys in training camp, everyone was like, holy cow, I can't believe how fast this guy is. It's insane. He's blowing up shoes. He's juking everyone out. Right. It's crazy. And we heard all of that from McCluster and for Thomas. And they came out and they were fine. They made some good plays. But they weren't like world-beating players, right? They were more gadget guys with some useful skills.
Yeah.
Whereas Hill, and by then we'd kind of all gotten kind of immune to this hype. You know, I was like, okay, another short guy that's going to take the league by storm.
Yeah.
And he hadn't been that productive in college, unlike McCluster and Thomas. And I'll never forget when it was against Houston in week two, and he had some big moments in the preseason where he's like, wow, he does seem pretty fast. But it was this kickoff against Houston where he ended up getting called back due to a block in the back or something like that. And I watched the way he turned the corner and just outran everyone that had angles.
Yeah.
And just all the way across the field. And that's where you saw – that was the first time I ever saw that, like, that sixth gear with him. Like, that gear that, like, Chris Johnson had at his peak.
Yep.
Or Randy Moss. I don't even mean Jamal Charles, because Jamal Charles had incredible top-end speed, but it wasn't Chris Johnson top-end speed, right?
Yeah.
This is like that DeSean Jackson, Randy Moss,
Chris Johnson. Very few guys have ever run that fast on a football field speed. And that, when I saw that, I was like, oh, holy crap. Okay, so he's different. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't the same thing. And then a few weeks later, when he made an incredible catch against the Saints on his only target that game, he demonstrated some skill set that made me think he was going to be more than just some fast guy. I mean, when he showed ball skills, when he showed some of that, the ability to track the ball in the air and the body control to come down with it. So I broke down both of those plays just to point out, like, he really, there were two moments with him, and so that made him a little more fun for me.
That's Seth Kizer of The Athletic and the Chief in the North newsletter. You can get links to both of those things up on his Twitter page, at RealMNChiefsFan. Our full conversation this week was like three times as long as that, so if you want to hear that, you can check it out at Almost Entirely Sports as a podcast page, wherever you get your podcasts, or go to AES.show. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more NFL Live KC. See you next. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back into NFL Live Kansas City, presented by Easton Roofing and Miller Lite. We will throw it now to Josh Briscoe. Oops, I'm hosting today. This segment has the host. We have a different host every night. Never mind. But I will continue being the host of not just this segment, but also this show for you tonight, and also Almost Entirely Sports begins here in about 15 minutes. But this is something you may have missed from 810 today, and our nominee is Eric Eager of Pro Football Focus. He was on the program with Seren Petro today, and if you want to hear the full thing, check out at 810WHB.com or the 810 mobile app. You can grab the podcasts at either of those places. And today, Seren asked Eric Eager about the implications of that salary cap we mentioned earlier, potentially dropping down to about $175 million in 2021.
Well, you know, we talked about this, I think, at least two times ago with Mahomes. It's, you know, Mahomes gives them a decent amount of flexibility this year and the next. And in the future, they know what his, you know, what he's going to cost. I know that the time frames are a little bit fluid right now, but, you know, when Mahomes starts to really incur, you know, the big hits, it's a little bit near the end of that. But they're going to have to plan ahead. But I do think for them, if this goes through, the big shock of what next year might have to have been is going to be a little bit lessened, right? And so if you're a Chiefs fan, that's great. I mean, that means that, you know, it's somewhat more even across the league. And I think if you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan and the Chiefs have to deal with the same rules as everybody else in the same, you know, they have to deal with the similar salary cap problems as everybody else, you're in a good position because you got 15.
Yes, I agree. But could they be in a position when you hear 175 floor, does that make you think that the cap could end up sliding down a little bit? When you hear soft cap or smoothing of the cap, does that scare you that the Chiefs could be looking at a kind of a tough situation with their cap finances?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough for them regardless, but I think if you iron it out over a bunch of seasons, it keeps you from having to make these. Because I think the scariest thing for me when I look at this is the Rappaport tweet that talked about if they weren't to play a game this season, then there's no one gets paid. Because to me, and if the players give up that in exchange for a smoothing out of the perturbation, essentially, that is this year, the players better be very vigilant about making sure that there's a week one, right? Because for me, like, the biggest fear that I have for the league, as a fan, as somebody who works in the league, as somebody who would take a significant, professional hit if there wasn't a season, if they don't get to week one, there is, or if there's, you know, the owners have a pretty big incentive to pull back before the season even starts in this case, right? So the optimist in me looks forward and says, okay, that means the players are pretty confident that they can be vigilant enough to follow the rules and get to week one. The pessimist in me says the owners are trying to pull a fast one by the players, and if things go pear-shaped at all early on, they're just going to pull the plug and we're going to have to wait until 2021 to see football.
that's a bit of a pessimistic view there, a conspiratorial view from Eric Eager. I think the analysis up to that point is all really good. And at that point, the conspiracy theory, I don't think is bad. I just hadn't considered it. It's one of the reasons that I wanted to bring that back here today, to think that, you know, depending on exactly where the poison pill is and everything. Also, we have a lot still TBD on this front. What exactly are all those mechanics we're laying, Eager was laying out there and Petro was asking about? We don't really know yet. There is still some stuff to be at least determined publicly, at the absolute very least. And we'll have to continue to be on top of that as we try to understand that a little bit better as we go. We'll talk about it more tonight on Almost Entirely Sports at 8 as well. We'll take a break now. Whenever we come back, we'll hear from the Katz brothers, Chris Jones' agents, next on 810. It's NFL Live KC here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, brought to you by Miller Lite. Miller Lite's the original light beer, brewed with great taste and only 96 calories. And I'm sure there are a few Miller Lites cracked open by the Katz brothers. They are the representatives for Chris Jones, their agents, and his agents. And they were on The Zone on Sports Radio 810 here earlier today. They talked to Jason Anderson about a whole bunch of things. Again, check out the podcast for the full thing. But they talked about a number of things here just in this clip. They talked about the reports that Chris Jones wanted Aaron Donald money, whether or not he would have sat out the regular season if he hadn't gotten this deal, and ultimately how they and the Chiefs got a deal done.
I think any great agent is going to go shoot for the star. We wanted to reset the market. And I truly believe if Chris Jones wasn't a franchise tag and was an unrestricted free agent, we would be able to probably reset the market for the defensive tackle position and get Aaron Donald plus type money. In this most recent collective bargaining agreement, the one thing that the owners did not budge on was the franchise tag. And in order to keep a guy like Chris Jones and have the leverage to be able to either negotiate a long-term deal or force him to play on that number, you now have that opportunity as a team. So we had to, you know, close the bridge and the gap in between that. And we felt that on a short length with the upfront guarantees that we were able to get, we're able to really get a deal here where Chris can continue to climb that mountain and within 3 years get an extension or play out the deal and be an unrestricted free agent right when he turns 30 years old. So it was an unbelievable win for both sides, and that's how deals get done.
Jason and Michael Katz, they are our guest right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. For either of you, I'm not sure which one to ask with this. You can both weigh in or one or the other. But there were tweets that were sent out by Chris Jones as a part of the process and the sort of the waiting game and getting to July 15th of he had talked with or mentioned Le'Veon Bell, and then Le'Veon Bell had talked about that and said, you know, maybe sitting out the season. I don't know if this is just part of the deal, it's just part of the dance, or was Chris willing and able or prepared to sit out the season if the Chiefs didn't budge or meet you guys to a spot that you felt was value to Chris Jones? Were you guys willing to sit out the year and say, we'll figure it out next year?
This is Jason. All I can say is Chris Jones is one of the most strong-minded individuals that Michael and I have ever been in front of. And when Chris speaks, it's usually the truth. So Chris gave us the ability and the power to hold firm at our position of where we were in negotiations, because they were reasonable of where he of what he was requesting, and B, he was very patient and understood the process in the communications. But to answer the question really directly, Chris is a man of his word. As you've seen, everything he does, he makes sure it happens. So at the end of the day, it wouldn't have been our call. It would have been Chris's. Thank God. We'll never know for now.
Yeah,
and that's the great news.
Agreement with that, Michael.
Yeah, I would just say the great news for us as agents, so we can sleep at night, is we are not in that position. And that's credit to the negotiators over on the Chiefs side. And you know, look what they just did with Patrick Mahomes. Unbelievable deal that really, truly, the way that Brant Hillis and Chris Shea and Veach structured that, they were able to carve out some room where we could structure our deal and get it done, where we would never be in an opportunity where Chris would sit out.
This is a hypothetical, so I grant that out of the gates that it is a hypothetical. But that position that you guys would be in, Michael, as agents, and saying, you know, Jason says that the most strong-minded individual, and what he says is what he feels and what's going to happen. So in a hypothetical world, if it didn't happen the way that it did, and we're all very excited about that, and it's the final minutes of figuring something out. Would you guys have advised him to sit out? If he said, I want to sit out, I'm going to sit out, I'm strong-minded, I know I can do this, would you have advised him to do that? Or what would your role be in that of helping him make that what is a monumental decision in somebody's life when it's $16 million on the line, which is crazy to think about. But how would your role be in that? Would you have advised him to say, you know what, if you want to sit out, let's do it?
Yeah, I mean, every circumstance is different, and if he was to, A, you have to get to training camp, so you'd have to sit first out of training camp, and then possibly something gets done, something doesn't get done. But in any case, there then is the season, and some players sit out for a game or two. It's basically $1 million a game. And again, you lay everything out to Chris. You show the financial loss. You show the pros, the cons. There's pros in playing because he has to show everybody that he can do it again. But in any case, there's a lot of things that go into that decision-making, and us being good agents and the NFLPA, these are things that you talk to your client about. But but the landscape is always different depending on how the client behaves and also the timing of the deal.
Did the Chiefs believe that there was a chance that he would sit out?
Listen, I think anything's possible. I believe that.
Okay.
Crit, you know, you don't want to test Chris Jones on or off the field. That's simple. And the good news is, and I know you guys like hypotheticals, and these are cool questions.
I do.
But the great news is we are not in that position.
True.
But we respect the fact that Chris has worked his tail off day in and day out to be in a position where if he had sat out, people may say he's crazy to walk away from that money for a year and be a man of principle. But a lot of people that know him would respect him if he had to do this, because that the Chiefs are now paying him. And that's the reason why the Chiefs are paying him that, because he earned it. Mm-hmm.
Jason and Michael Katz is our guest. This is not a hypothetical then. Jason, along the way, you had mentioned, look what they did with Patrick Mahomes and getting that contract done. Was that part of the conversation that, hey, from the Chiefs side to you guys, that, you know, we got to get this deal done with Patrick Mahomes, but Chris Jones is priority. Like, we're going to get it done. We want him to be here long term. But we're trying to do two things at once. Was the communication open, that sort of the plan all along, the way that Brett Veach presented it after Patrick Mahomes and Chris Jones, both deals were done, that it was getting Mahomes' deal figured out and then figuring out Chris Jones after that? Was that known, that that was going to be the process, as the way the order went?
We knew that when the Mahomes deal started to happen. And listen, common sense tells you that deal's got to get in place. So just from a common sense standpoint, we knew that deal had to get done, or that deal wasn't getting done. And then they'd be dealing with us one way or the other, whether that deal got done or it didn't get done. But I know for them, with the climate pandemic, that structure was a key thing that they needed on both of these deals, and cash flow and how you see the deal is. And that's how it works.
When Chris said on Monday, which was a great story, that he said as soon as Mahomes signed the deal, he called Chris and said, hey, man, let's get this done. I left money on the table. You got to be a Chief here, so let's go and win some more Super Bowls. So Mahomes signs the deal, immediately turns his attention to Chris Jones, the man. The Kansas City Chiefs, when they get it done, the Brett Veach and you talk about the guys that are working with the cap. When they get it done with Patrick Mahomes, do they immediately turn their attention to you and call you guys and say, all right, that's done. Let's get this thing done with Chris Jones. How quickly does that transition go from the Chiefs, from Mahomes' deal to now let's get something done with you guys and Chris Jones?
Listen, there was always some attention on us, without a doubt. They're always communicating, and they're always telling us basically what's happening. And right when that deal was done, it definitely we got to work right away as well, because they wanted to get a deal done, and we wanted to get a deal done. And when both sides really want to get a deal done, you figure out how to get the deal done. And a little patience, perseverance, and a lot of talks back and forth, Michael and I were able to, with Chris's arsenal, get it done, and the Chiefs as well.
One more quick one. Michael, the construction of the contract, we've talked about around here the creativity that the Chiefs have used to be able to try to manage the pandemic and the unknown in the future while somehow getting Patrick Mahomes and Chris Jones locked up with the $600 million, but $10 million in a signing bonus, and that's it. As you're going down the road in the construction of the contract, is it difficult to where you're going, okay, we're going to get our client signed 4 years and $80 million, but there's not going to be a check written right now in a signing bonus that is so standard in the NFL? How much of a part of the conversation was from the Chiefs that, look, the signing bonus, we need to save some money, at least cash, for next year if we have to, renegotiate some things? And how easy of a sell, or was it your guys' idea to come up with this construction of a contract that had no signing bonus, which was a shock to almost everybody when we saw the details?
Yeah, well, listen, it was very shocking to a lot of people that deals were getting done in this pandemic. And obviously, if there was no pandemic, we're never doing a deal without a signing bonus. Thankfully, Chris is very frugal. He's got a great financial team behind him, and he's able to save all of his money that he earned for his rookie year. So a signing bonus was not detrimental to the situation. The guarantees at signing is what we needed and what we got. Chris will have $37 million in cash by April 5th. It's great that it's spread out. He'll, so all of his money's guaranteed this year. And I think that a signing bonus was nothing for us that was going to hold the deal from not getting done.
And we Jason were and Michael to, Katz. We were sorry about that. Go ahead.
No. This is Jason. And the Chiefs, something was important to Chris. Pat got 10. So the Chiefs, they advanced $1.5 million to Chris that was payable within 5 days. So the few key items that he may want or may not want, he's got some cash in hand in the deal as well. So that was important to Chris, and that did happen.
Jason and Michael Katz there with Jason Anderson on the Zone today, Chris Jones' agents. A lot of interesting stuff into the system there of how they got that deal done and what Jones was looking for, what his camp was looking for, what he was and wasn't willing to sacrifice, and also what the Chiefs were and weren't willing to sacrifice. One of the big conversational topics around that has obviously been what it's going to mean for the salary cap for the long term. And though we are now wrapping up NFL Live Kansas City here on Sports Radio 810, on the other side of this break is almost entirely sports. We'll talk more salary cap stuff over on the other side of the break here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.